Welcome, ladies and gents. Here's another special guest. We got the Cult-Worthy Podcast, Antonio Palacios. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. All right. So, yeah, I knew there were many people who kind of wanted to do something like this, but they just couldn't pin down when or where or how, or some of them were even overthinking it, or it's like, yeah, no, let's just have some fun and just go with the flow.
I mean, for sure. And like, you know, gangster actors, I mean, again, we were talking about like subjective terms. I mean, there are so many subgenres of gangster movies. Therefore, there are so many
shows. Be frowned upon because you're bringing the bad guy, and yet it paid way better because not many wanted to do it.
Exactly, man. And like, there's character actors that just wanted to get work. So you would see them either as a gangster, or then you'd see them as like a doctor on a TV show. So it's hard to kind of like narrow down who real gangster actors are. So I'm going to say gangster characters played by amazing character actors.
We'll mention a few who play cops as well. It all kind of flows together because they could easily be a crooked cop or a cop who goes too far.
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah. So I can't wait to dive into this list because I know you, listening to some of your episodes, man, I know my shit. And then you guys got people on who know things that I've never even heard of. And it was really
eye-opening. And I was just like, well, this is what we want to do. We want to talk about what we're passionate about. And so the last thing anyone needs to do is just, you know, read the first thing they see on Wikipedia.
Right.
I'll even put a list in front of you just for reference. But yeah. So when did you kind of realize you really liked this genre, subgenre in some aspects, you know?
I mean, it's probably the genre that I was exposed to the earliest, you know. If anyone listens to my podcast, some of my earlier episodes, I kind of go into like these audio blogs, these autobiographical stories of how
you do a lot of research. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, my dad got into films in two ways. Way number one, it was the 80s. I was a latchkey kid. So instead of like having a babysitter, he figured, oh, well, how about I just pay like $50 a month for premium cable and leave him at home? So that's kind of where I got.
Become a man. As long as you don't go all thug on someone, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the other
part of my education. You're not watching hard soft porn, you'd be fine.
Yeah. And then the other part of my education, film-wise, is we used to have this thing called Ditch Day, where he would grab me from school, and he was really big about me going to school. So if he was to pick me up from school early, like say I had a doctor's appointment or something.
A doctor's appointment.
He'd make up some shit.
Hopefully not a law doctor.
Nice. You're right. And he would take me to the movies, and we had this deal. I got to pick a film. He got to pick a film.
Double feature.
Yeah. So I'd be like 6, 7 years old. I'd pick Flight of the Navigator. Nice. And then we'd walk right into Aliens. Or I'd pick The Great Mouse Detective and we'd walk right into RoboCop. So I had a very early access to a lot of these films. And his two favorite genres were Westerns and gangster films. So I was exposed to both of those at a very
young age. Did you ever have to cover your eyes if it got too intense or if there was sex or rape? Or
you know, the only thing he ever cared about was like that kind of sexuality, not even nudity so much. I remember he took me to go see Quest for Fire in the theater.
Nudity, yeah.
Yeah, and Radon Chong is nude in that entire movie, and he's like, that's how it was back then. I'm like, okay. So it was like a
plain caveman
for him. Yeah, naked caveman.
Ron Perlman and Radon Chong. Last naked.
There you go. So very big love for gangster films of all eras, too, from a very early age. You know, my dad was first generation American. His family were Mexican Italian. He spoke both fluently, and so he kind of learned a lot of English from TV and from movies.
Nice.
And it was, I'm telling you, man, it was gangster films, Westerns, and Three Stooges. I want to say, like, he was really into old like slapstick comedy as well. But so Charles Bronson was huge for him. One of the first movies I ever saw as a kid was the Valachi Papers, you know, where he kind of plays.
That is a good one. Yes.
Oh God. Yeah. He plays a gangster turned mob informant. And the funny thing is, like, you know, Charles Bronson was Polish. He was you know, not necessarily Italian, but he passed for so many ethnicities, so they cast him as a gangster a lot. I mean, he played Machine Gun Kelly. Yeah, so Charles Bronson was big in my childhood, especially when he played the tough gangster type character.
And you never believed it, and it just was always one of the, I mean, you did believe it, but I mean, it was always just one of those, there's just like, you just, he would say so much while saying very little, and just sometimes just stare around, and I give him credibility, because I see other action or crime dramatic actors do it nowadays, and they just seem just too bland, we've just seen too much, and he was faring in all kinds of movies, regardless of the subject matter and everything, or if he actually wanted to do it, he just gave it all.
Exactly, and very few actors can act with their eyes as well as Charles Bronson can. I mean, it's mostly a squint, but it's not like a Clint Eastwood squint. It's a squint
that can say
many different things. And plus, he had like such piercing eyes, which Sergio Leone used to perfection in Once Upon a Time in the West. And again, like there was like a gentleness to his tough guy behind the eyes, but you would never want to like turn your back on the dude.
No, not for a minute. You'd be like, I think I'm going to die.
Yeah, man. So Charles Bronson, even though he doesn't get mentioned a lot in the gangster category, because, I mean, everyone wants to talk about De Niro and Pacino and Pesci, but man, there are some more notable actors that got cast in great gangster roles that just don't get talked.
No, they really don't. They just go on, and just make you realize that there's just so much more to the overall picture.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, man? Like, what comes to mind when you think gangster actor that isn't necessarily like the ones cut from the gangster cloth that we all know about?
Yeah, so, I mean, I did equal parts, you know, don't get me wrong. Edward G. Robinson is far better actor than people give him credit for, and I did watch a bunch of Humphrey Bogart. But, you know, I feel like Al Pacino kind of just phoned it in for a while, and then De Niro just got to where he was more of a dramatic guy, and he stopped doing as many gangster stuff. But, I mean, I watch a lot of TV, so there were many guys who I grew up just loving, and I still to this day love, and I would see any kind of movie. I would watch a lot of Hong Kong cinema, Japanese cinema, Mexican movies like Blood In, Blood Out, and then hood films like Dead Presidents and Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood. So yeah, I got plenty of those from the 80s and 90s. Colors is another winner. And
yeah, man.
It was all a matter of, as long as I feel the energy in the room, you know, that's great. And I still love David Ayer's movies, how he's got a lot of the hard-boiled cops and corruption and just gangbangers who have also been betrayed by higher up powers that be. So, you know, Street Kings, Into Watch, Training Day. But more or less, I mean, there's just so many other guys who it's like, I'm not surprised when I see him guest star on all these other hit shows like Law and Order or Power TV show. And so a lot of the Sopranos actors were pretty damn good. James Gandolfini, what's his name? Tony Sirico played, you know, Polly Walnuts, and Vincent Pastore, Big Pussy. But even Al Sapienza, I think, is a really dynamite actor. He plays, remember the bad guy in season one, Mikey Palmisi?
Yeah.
He'll show up as a congressman or some other thing nowadays. But I'm like, I just know just with that intense face, he's got something.
Yeah, man. And David Provol, too, in season two.
From Mean Streets. There you go.
Yeah, from Mean Streets, and you'd see him pop up in a lot of like B movies, or maybe as like a little bit part.
Not even worthy of his talent. Just like, but the dude can act.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, and that's what I wanted to kind of come to on some of the guys you just mentioned. There is a danger about being typecast if you start doing the gangster genre too long, and then like you'll see a character, one of these gangster guys who's been typecast for years, try to do something different, and people just want to see more of that gangster character, and so they're kind of a caricature of themselves.
They just can't help themselves, and Marlon Brando's known for his crime roles, like on the Waterfront and Godfather, but that's just it. That wasn't because he wanted to play it, it was mainly just because those weren't his best known roles, and he was difficult to work with. So, and Henry Silva is another guy, just in every other Italian movie you see him pop up as the big bad. And he said, basically, they have to like your face. He once said in like an interview, if they don't like your face, then you pretty much just get the role that no one else really wants to do.
Well, I mean, Henry Silva is a great example because, I mean, that guy got so much work in Italy and Spain and giallos and all these different Italian crime films because he, A, they knew they could market to America if they had him on the bill. So you'll see so many Lee Van Cleef, Henry Silva, James Coburn jumped over there for a little while.
Yes, he did.
You see these guys, and they either do Westerns or they do these criminal gangster films or giallos.
James Cagney is like the only one in the 40s who kind of broke out of it. And that's because he really was – he did have a giant classical actor background. He knew how to stand, and he taught that principle in like some acting schools or something like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, you can only imagine. I wish I would have been a fly on the wall back in, like, the 1950s when they said, oh, we're going to have the guy from White Heat do Yankee Doodle Dandy and tap dance.
Of all things, yeah. His final performance, he's coaxed out of retirement by Milos Forman. You know, we need you to play the mayor in Ragtime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, there's very few that have been able to break that mold. And there's a movie that I'm going to be doing on one of my other shows. I have a show called The Cult Worthy Classic, where I deep dive weekly into films made before 1970. Mm. And the film, we should have you on that one for sure. Please. There's a film that I'll be talking about soon with Edward G. Robinson called Scarlet Street. Have you seen that one?
Yes, that's a pretty good one.
Oh, it's a great one, man. And here's the thing. It's like he is so against type in that film. We are so used to him playing.
You see the cover and you're like, is he a gangster? He's like, no, he's a detective.
Well, no, he's an artist. And he's like a
– okay, wait.
He's demasculated. He has a wife and he has this mistress that are both like kind of exploiting him. And it's kind of like that pre-cuckolding – kind of caricature.
Oh, okay, my bad. I was thinking of a different one. But yes, Robinson, yeah, that's a good one. Fritz Lang.
Fritz Lang, exactly. And it's kind of got that same vibe that he used.
I was thinking of a different one.
Okay. Yeah, but again, it's an obscure film now because it wasn't marketed well either on TV or on VHS because everyone was expecting to see Edward G. Robinson play a gangster. And here he is playing a demasculated middle-aged man who's going through like this midlife crisis. No one wanted to see that at the time. And now it's looked at as like this minor classic because here he is breaking that gangster mold. Just amazing, amazing film. And again, we don't see a lot of crime gangster genre character actors be able to break that mold and find success again. Now it's different if you're like,
it's ridiculous because it is a public domain film.
Yeah, right. And what's crazy that is like if you're Denzel Washington, you're Denzel Washington and you can play a gangster and then you can play like John Q, the father of the boy with cancer. Like you have these guys that can swim back and forth. But if you're a character actor, it's so hard to break the mold that people are used to you in.
Yeah, Chow Yun-Fat, Wesley Snipes, and even crazy people like Vinnie Jones and Michael Caine, I think are pretty good. But just going around, I even see bit part actors like Armin Ashanti, Bing Rames, and Gina Gershon and Andy Garcia will just show up and not necessarily... They can be kind of just someone in the middle. Like they're an illegal tattoo parlor guy, they're a chicks selling drugs, you know, just something like that. And I'll mention a bunch of other guys here who, you know, you've seen like Garrett Dillahunt and Ian McShane are both amazing on Deadwood, but you see plenty of other roles they've done where you're like, yeah, I'm not surprised that you played a sheriff's deputy or a loan shark, you know, at one point.
Yeah, I mean, Ian McShane, like his whole early career in the 60s and 70s was nothing but gangster films. Nothing. Like, yeah, Sitting Target with Oliver Reed. Oh my God, what a great film that
Oliver
is.
Oliver Reed, there's another one. Gabriel Byrne, Craig Fairbrass, Danny Aiello, even John Travolta to some extent. Yeah, it's just like they just are in that mold. I'm even impressed by a lot of guys from Prison Break, like Peter Stormare, what was his other guy's name? Dominic Purcell.
Yeah, Dominic Watson.
And even Amory Nolasco and Muse Watson, who you also might know as Gibbs' friend on NCIS, and like they just go around, and it's like I'm always blown away by how they can portray those roles. Even comedians like Anthony Anderson will even surprise us. Like I see him as one of the crooked cops in The Departed, and then
yeah,
as this basically serial rapist gangster on The Shield, who basically. He really does eat up the room. You feel fearing for your life, even though he's behind bars, because he just is so ruthless and has no shame in all his wrongs that he's doing. And even Mark Margolis from Oz and Breaking Bad, I mean, he perfectly compliments Aaron Paul, Bryan Cranston, and just...
Yeah, he's an interesting one because, I mean, Abel Ferreira used him in a lot of movies. He's very Abel versatile. Ferreira
is so loyal to all these guys.
Yeah. I mean, like, Mark Margolis... Again, that character actor, because of the face, I'd say face first, voice second.
You Richard Romanus kind face. Of guy, yeah. He just shows up in a Greek movie and then he comes back in the States. Gino Silva from Scarface is kind of a similar one. And just he'll always be known as like the Claw or whatever his name is, you know, at the end.
Yeah. The idea that these guys get so much work playing a particular character. I can't really blame them because getting work, you are almost guaranteed, like maybe let's say 3 or 4 parts a year, either on TV or a B movie, or maybe something that's actually like going to be released wide scale in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It might be like the right move if you know and accept what your face is. Because, I mean, think about casting calls. Think about how many thousands of people just show up and are rejected just by how they look. So one of my favorite examples of this is the Maniac guy, Zar.
Robert Zadar is a great example, yeah, because you take away those Maniac Cop movies, you also got Tango and Cash and just a bunch of other B pictures, and you're like, but he did his best, you know?
Yeah, and it's his face. Like, I guarantee you, he didn't go in and read lines for a role to get. Someone
and it's
saw
just
that
so sad because they treated him like such shit at conventions. I gave my condolences to his pal, Joe Estevez. That's right, Martin Sheen's younger lookalike brother, because they were friends and acted in a bunch of movies together. And apparently, yeah, he had indicated that they just, because of his health condition, they would just tease him at conventions. It's like, yeah, you're here to get a convention from someone. You got to be nice. Come on.
I think it would be different now because the fanboy culture has really, I want to say,
been called
matured.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's matured because it kind of has to be. And, you know, people who are... It's funny, we'll kind of like break off for a second on gangster actors. Let's talk about like genre pictures that these gangster and criminal genre actors were in. I mean,
David Patrick Kelly and Kerry Tagawa were kind of like Zadar. They'd be in these B pictures and they'd be in a giant blockbuster like Mortal Kombat or Commando. And you're like, but I'd still know him as that one gangbanger or, you know, evil bad guy who's kind of petty. And James Remar is kind of a similar thing. You know,
yeah, man. And I think the point I was getting to was that there is almost like a retribution for these guys right now, because 20 years ago, these, let's say, B movies or midnight movies you'd find like on USA Up All Night. I mean,
yes, Billy Bob Thornton, all those guys. Yeah.
People gave that no respect back then. But now we've got these Blu-ray boutique labels like
Shudder's a big thing. Amazon Prime is like, they missed them. They missed it.
Yeah, like we've got all these boutique labels. Arrow Video. Snickers Syndrome. Kino Lorber.
Severin, yeah.
Severin, Scorpion. People are collecting these en masse, and it's giving like a rebirth to these genre films. Therefore, it's getting a rebirth to these character and genre actors. So now you get people who are just buying a film in it because Dazar was in it. Like... It's too bad that a lot of these
collector's
people
items.
Aren't around. Yeah. To like see this.
Pretty sure Henry Silva will retire again and it'll be the same kind of thing. It's like, oh, you know, it's going to go up on Amazon Prime. It's like $200 to buy this one rare item. It's like, I'm not paying that much. I'll check eBay. You want to see it?
I mean, like, I just spent $30 on the 4K release of Alligator with Robert Forster.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
And Henry Silva is, like, the big game hunter that they hired to kill the alligator in. I mean, this was a movie that for, like, the 40 years it's been around has been considered just a B-movie trash. Dude, the week that it came out on 4K, it topped the top 10 of Amazon's sales list. Fucking Alligator. So there is this large group of people starting to realize how amazing these movies and these actors are, and they're spending money on this stuff. So kind of like what your podcast is and my podcast is, you know, The Cultworthy, it's about exposing all of these actors and genre films that deserved the cult following that they didn't get in their prime.
And truly do, especially for a Jaws parody and being its own cool project in and of itself. So yeah, I mean, and Joe Dante, I mean, he doesn't really do any gangster movies, but yeah, he did kind of have the sense, kind of like Larry Cohen, to just get a lot of these New York actors and just put them in just wacky premises. And then it's just so funny. Sometimes you do see a different side of them than what you, versus what you saw on, again, just the regular go-to, you know, hard-boiled crime shows or gangster movies.
And I'm sure it'd be fun to work with these guys on set, because you have to think that, like, their ego had been broken early in their career due to rejection for either how they looked or how they came off on film. And they're like, well, I guess I'm just playing this gangster character.
For the valiant time, yeah.
Character now. Yeah, and then you get a director with some vision and creativity like Joe Dante or Louis Teague, and they cast them against type.
Louis Teague is so underrated.
So underrated. So then you get these actors cast against type, and it creates a very memorable performance. I mean, the fact that, I mean, not a gangster actor per se, but that Joe Dante had Christopher Lee play like this wacky lab scientist in Gremlins 2, that's a memorable role right there, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
And so yeah.
It's eye-catching too, because you're like, wait, that's him.
That's Dracula.
Oh, man. Did you ever see The Shield, like the other ones? Like, who would have guessed that Michael Chiklis and Walton Goggins and even Kenneth Johnson just would have all these other big roles years later, like Coyote, Justified, and even SWAT? You know, just like playing all different kinds of cops / crooked guys / cops.
I mean, when I was a kid, Michael Chiklis was the commish.
He was the commish. It's like totally... He gets deadly when he wants to, but at the end of the day, he's like a family man. You know, he's Andy Griffith. It's like, it's just such a wild evolution.
And that was an actor who I think got the retribution that he deserved, because I remember...
Went against his agent's advice. He was had been on a failed sitcom, and the director of the episode did not want to even see him audition. And then finally, he was pressured, like, no, just seriously, you got to look at this. He shaved his head. He worked out in the gym. You can't believe it.
Yeah, no, he's great. I remember either during or after the commish, he made a biopic about John Belushi called Wired, which was,
yes, actually,
it was a pretty good movie, man, but it didn't get the recognition.
It got banned because the Belushi estate, you know, called in some favors and tried to have it not play. So it's like they didn't have anything to work with. They couldn't even use any stock footage or anything.
Yeah,
had to apologize for that movie. He's like, no, you shouldn't have to apologize. You're doing your job to do the best thing possible. And I mean, he has kind of a comedy and music background, so it's even funnier how, again, we think of this badass, and it's like he's got all these other talents that we downplay.
And again, there's that retribution there. Like, here's a guy who probably thought his career was over, and he hustled and bustled and then got put on The Shield, which, man, how many spawns have we seen were inspired by that show?
It doesn't get enough credit either. Everyone always goes to The Sopranos, Breaking Bad bracket, but I see more of The Shield in most of anything, especially with how subtle they'll introduce various subplots on shows these days. Like, yeah, I watch Ray Donovan, and I get way more vibes from The Shield than I do, say, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, nowadays, I mean, it was probably the cop show that kind of gave all the future cop shows permission to be aggressive and to not be like good versus bad and you know, blue line, all that stuff like that. It was daring and it was dirty, and that's what made it unique.
Totally. It's just unheard of. Then, I mean, I even look at the TV show Homicide and how a lot of those actors, you know, like John Polito or Daniel Baldwin would play gangsters or cops and, you know, B to Z grade movies, but they're not doing a bad job. But you got to also give them credit. They got a lot working against them. John Polito, you kind of can't tell apart from all the other bald Italian guys, and yet he's trying his hardest and he's in Coen Brothers movies. And then Daniel's same kind of thing. And The Crow. And yeah, Daniel's same deal. It's like, okay, he's probably hired because he's more affordable than Alec and sounds like him, but it's like, he's not offensive compared to some of the others. So it's like, it's pretty cool that he got to be on that awesome show of the 90s that was pretty groundbreaking. Anthony LaPaglia is kind of another one. He shows up as Al Capone in Road to Perdition, but he's been in a bunch of other hitman thrillers and just bizarre crime movies as before he was, you know, appearing on a few different shows.
See, he's a funny one. I love Anthony LaPaglia, and he's Australian. Not a lot of people know
that. Like Mel Gibson, he lost his accent when he came here. So yeah, talk about a sacrifice.
If you see him in interviews, it pops back up. But like,
oh, it does? Okay.
He's one of those guys, man. Like, again, the face. And there's something, again, kind of gentle yet aggressive about that guy where he really can play many different characters. I like him particularly the best when he plays a tough guy. Like he did play Frank Nitti in that, I think it was called The Enforcer back in the 80s.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did.
And that was before he kind of got recognized. And so, you know what, the Australian soap opera that was like a springboard for all these Australian hunks?
It was like Southland Street or some shit like that.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, like Heath Ledger was in it, the Hemsworth.
Tamora Morrison, Django Fett, and Once We Were Warriors. There's a guy who's invaluable, and I think he returned to it years later too as a thank you. He's like, hey, without you, I don't got a schedule.
I can't remember if Eric Bana was one of those, but I mean, I know he was a comedian, but again, there was these
he seemed like he was on the list for a while, and he never really did, but I'm like, I'm just waiting for him to, you know, play a bunch of criminals, but he mainly would just play comedic guys.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole funny thing, though, is that he was like this comedian in Australia, and then he makes Chopper, where he plays like
one of the most realized serial killer, and it's a dark comedy.
Yeah, and then he thought he was gonna be typecast in that role, and then they're like, oh, do you want to be the Hulk?
Right, you want to be in Troy, you want to be in Hannah. Did you ever watch any of The Wire?
I did, but not when it was big. I watched it after the fact on DVD.
Same. It was my go-to in college, along with 24 and The Shield. And I was just like, but no wonder no one wants to talk about the show. It's a great show. And it's just so real that basically they must have just pissed off some corporations. They just hit that nail on the head. But, I mean, Idris Elba's never been better. I mean, Loser is a good show, but I mean, as Stringer Bell, I mean, you just bought how he was just a smooth criminal. Michael K. Williams, rest in peace. Brought a cool vibe to it as being kind of a Robin Hood of the hood, who just goes around stealing money from drug dealers and supporting himself. And he's already closeted and everything. And that's not an easy role, especially for a breakout role. And it's just, there's so many other good actors on there. Dominic West, I always light up. I see him in goofy comic book movies like Punisher Warzone. I can't help myself, but you know, whenever I see him pop up, I repeat his line, what the fuck did I do wrong? You know, just he has that whole essence to him. And I mean, that wasn't easy to play either. You play a cop who's well-intended and good at his job, but just a shitty human being. He just can't keep up with his divorced wife's kids, and everyone can't stand to be around him. So he's playing so much, and I'm sure that had to be kind of annoying. And I know he and Idris even say they don't watch any movie they're in, and I'm like, well, that's okay. You are close to it. You lived it. You can just take a compliment, and I probably would find it painful too, given the material.
Yeah, right?
There's even that one guy, I forget his name, he's a Chinese actor who was in, he was that supporting gangster in The Dark Knight, and more recently he was in other stuff like Contagion and the recent Mortal Kombat movie. You know the guy?
Oh, the guy that plays what?
Han or whatever, yeah.
Han, yeah. Yeah. I don't know him by name, but yes, I see him pop up in things.
And I'm like, that dude, that's a supporting gangster role in a comic book movie, and he owned it.
I always say with that movie, with The Dark Knight, My favorite character in that movie is William Fichtner in the first 5 minutes of that film.
I'm glad you brought up Fichtner, because he also owns it. And people forget, you know, he's one of the crooked cops in Strange Days. He's the one of the criminal guys who betrays the robbery crew in Heat. And yeah, on Prison Break, he totally kind of went to a whole new level. And I think he got more offers because they're like, here you are, you're playing a crooked FBI guy.
Again, man, talking about the face. He's got that face.
He can be anything at any time. And now I see him pop up with his buddy Kim Coates, who's, you know, everyone knows now for
Pig.
I grew up watching him in infamous sci-fi blockbusters, you know, like Battlefield Earth and Waterworld, and I see him as a mysterious contact in the Bruce Willis movie Hostage and Last Boy Scout, and then he's on Sons of Anarchy with real-life bodyguard guy Chuck Zito, and so it's like Don Oz, and like, yeah, these guys that Mark Boone Jr. was another one that spawned from that. I was used to seeing him in Christopher Nolan stuff, like he's the creepy tattoo parlor guy.
Yeah, and he's Memento.
The crooked cop in Batman Begins. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't even recognize him at some times because it's before he put on the beard, but I just love how, regardless of what anyone thinks of Sons of Anarchy, you know, it's just, I'm glad that gave them some extra recognition because they really did try their hardest. I mean, you even see it with Mark McCauley, Tony Lobianco, and Victor Argo. They would just flat out just show up in a movie and just, you know, they were the go-to. You need a cop, you need a gangster, regardless of what we can show on TV, you know, movie at 5, you're in it, you know. It can happen.
Funny, I did about all these guys. Kim Coates in The Client as the hitman.
Oh, that's right.
Working for Barry the Blade Maldonado, played by Anthony LaPaglia.
There you go. It all without a trace. Sons of Anarchy connection. There you go. Oh, man. Yeah. Great movie. Even A Time to Kill has a bunch of names. And she's like, yeah, but they're usually playing the politician or the military guy. And there they are playing serial killers or Ku Klux Klan people. I'm like, Jesus.
You know, that brings me to an interesting idea. Like, when we're talking about gangsters, we're really talking about, like, the criminal films that are either, like, New York, Chicago, L.A.-based.
Even Louisiana.
Here we are in Louisiana, and, like, in Time to Kill, Southern gangsters don't get enough credit. Like,
it's because they're very uncomfortable to play, but like you say, is like, if you don't remember, you know, the hard-boiled, you know, detectives who take them down, like in Mississippi Burning or In the Heat of the Night, you're going to remember the racist bigots, you know, who just are the scum of the town, bigger, worse than the town bullies, you know.
But I mean, like, think about, on the other aspect, Don Cheadle in Devil in a Blue Dress.
Yes, we dedicated an episode to him, and he was just like, he's just dynamite because, you know, that was after Colors, and then he does Brooklyn's Finest, where he plays both. He's both a gangbanger and an undercover narc, and he's having trouble balancing out those worlds. You know, it starts out as a, I'm going to bust this organization. Then it becomes a, I'm going to avenge the death of my gangster friend who I grew close to. And, but yeah, in Devil in a Blue Dress, yeah, you go the whole movie, you're like, what side is he on? He's just so disrespectful. But I don't know who he's working for, really, until the end. And
I'm not sure how Southern he is, but I also like Joe Don Baker in Charlie Varick. You know, they bring him in from the South. He wears that big 10-gallon hat.
Yes.
I think his name is Molly in that film.
He gets so much shit for being in silly movies and post-Walking Tall, but he really is a reliable badass.
Film, in Charlie Varick, I said on my podcast that I thought that his character was kind of like the genesis for Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men.
Oh,
he's kind of like that sociopathic, but also calm and collected madman who just doesn't give up. I mean, at the end of Charlie Varick, spoiler alert, I'm sure you spoil films on your podcast.
It's a good movie with Walter Matthau.
Yeah, it's one of those characters where it's like he gets called off. They call him off the job, but he is one of those guys that cannot rest until the job is done. So he sees it through all the way until the end, which like results in his downfall. But again,
can't let it go. Like, he steals money from people, and he's just like, yeah, but it's not about this. I've been told
honor is that like weird gangster honor. And yeah, that's a character that not a lot of people like really give enough credit for. That's a badass character.
Really is. I know he's not really a gangster guy, but how about Gary Cole as the crooked sheriff in A Simple Plan?
Yeah, fantastic.
I think definitely No Country owes to that, and just other movies in general. It's like, just what would you do? You see money in the middle of nowhere. Would you take it? Would you snatch it?
100%.
Would you? Could you? man, and there's just so many other guys. Obviously, Tarantino's got no shortage. I mean, Tim Roth is just intriguing in any American or British production because he's just there's just so many, much like Gabriel Byrne and, again, as some of the other ones you mentioned, LaPaglia, and this is just like there's just so many different ways he can go about a role, and you just know that. I mean, he chooses even the best times to ham it up when the movie really isn't working, and he kind of just has a hint that he's just not getting any notes, so he just stops giving a shit.
Yeah, you can see that in a lot of films. It's not a gangster film, but the film Mixed Nuts, which is like an ensemble comedy.
Fun movie. Even
I love that movie. I love that movie. But what makes that movie fun is that I feel a lot of those people didn't get enough direction, so they all go off the rails. And you're lucky that you have a cast like that that can make going off the rails work.
They got an improv comedy background, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ray Donovan himself, Liev Schreiber's there in his film debut.
Oh yeah, that's like one of my favorite roles of his. What about British gangsters of like the 70s, 80s, and even the early 90s?
Even Roger Daltrey of The Who was in a few, but yeah, there's this one I followed, Billy Murray.
Yeah.
No relation to the comedic actor. And much like Craig Fairbrass, I mean, he'll star in a lot of those, you know, Rise of the Foot Soldier type movies, St. Patrick's Day, along with Charles Dance, who everyone knows now from Game of Thrones. But it's like, yeah, it's like these guys for years, they would be the heavies. They'd be the henchman number five and then slowly work their way. It's like, now I get to be the big boss, the big bad. And people in America know him from like Guy Ritchie movies or even freaking like Call of Duty or Battlefield type voiceovers. You know, it's like they'll play military guys or they'll be in a blockbuster movie like Tomb Raider and Cliffhanger type things. It's like, that's wild.
Yeah, I mean, like Bob Hoskins got his start as playing like a British gangster heavy back in the Long Good Friday.
Chris Brosnan's in a few, including that one.
Yeah, who else that I like
Helen
to think
Mirren, kind of, even though she's known for, you know, Prime Suspect. I mean, yeah, she would play a gangster's wife half the time. Ray Winstone's definitely a good example, and he would hate being called that in public. He's like, no, I'm just an octa. No, don't do that.
The first movie I saw him in was Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains with Diane Lane as like this teenage punk wannabe girl, and he's supposed to be like a Joe Strummer character who kind of like trying to show them the ropes. And I remember seeing that film, I was like, he's such a nice guy. And then I saw Sexy Beast, I'm like, oh. Which is, again, Sexy Beast. Here is Ben Kingsley playing
Ian McShane.
Yeah, oh god, Ian McShane. But like Ben Kingsley, man, he didn't get his like gangster on until later in his career. I mean,
really surprising.
Yeah, he starts his career off playing like Gandhi and
diplomat,
then,
or rich privileged people,
or
like
a
Anthony
scientist,
Hopkins.
Or scientist. He was in that movie with Michael Caine where he was John Watson and Sherlock Holmes without a clue. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it was a real surprise to see him come in into Sexy Beast. And then he kind of played that heavy for a while after that. He started kind of like playing the heavy throughout the 2000s.
I'd see him play bad guys, but he mainly just kind of went back to his Middle Eastern heritage. It's like, okay, I'll play a terrorist. I'll play a war criminal. I'll play a strict dad, you know, who curses a lot. Yeah. It's just...
Yeah. Another character that I think doesn't get a lot of credit when you think of like the gangster genre is Robert Shaw, especially in The Sting.
Yes. Oh, man. And, yeah, everyone just likes to quote Jaws, but, yeah, when you see him in The Sting, and even as that hitman in that James Bond film from Russia with Love, I just knew he had an essence about him. And, yeah, the rest of the time he basically, played military guys or just random swashbucklers, weird mercenaries guys with an accent. It's like, but he really is a defined character actor. You heard great things about people, how he would tell wacky tales to people like Oliver Reed and something, Peter O'Toole. And it's like, but he had a cool stature to him where it's just, even just the glance, you know, he just means he has something on his mind that he's later going to reveal.
Yeah, 100%. And again, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, we were talking about genre and gangster criminal actors, but I love it when a actor, whether they're like mainstream or character, yes, not known for playing a gangster role, dives into that. I was really surprised how well I liked Tom Hanks in
The Lady Killers.
No, the Sam Mendes film.
Oh, Road to Perdition. So there you go.
Road to Perdition. Yeah, I was really surprised how well I thought he handled that, because he turns the tough on when he needs it, but here's a guy who's also trying to be a good dad. He's undereducated, so his career working for Paul Newman is kind of out of necessity.
There's another one, Paul Newman. Yeah, other than a bunch of Cassidy and a bunch of other movies. Yeah, I just never really thought of him as, he's the go-to guy. Just always plays a gangster. But he certainly has his share of bad guy roles or just questionable ethics in his roles. You see him in Hombre. Oh, what's the other one? HUD. He's playing a douchebag, cowboy on a ranch.
And also, like, he was a sex symbol, and a lot of people don't want to see sex symbols play.
Yeah, and Elliot Kazan and all those other guys seem to be able to do that. They're just like, hey, I'm theater, I'm respected, I'll always have a living if this doesn't work out in theaters. Sidney Lumet was kind of the same way, challenging his actors. Even John Cazale. I mean, you can say, hey, yeah, Freed from the Godfather. I'm like, but he played a guy trying to get, afford his lover's sex change operation in Dog Day Afternoon. Died so fucking young and barely any credits, and is like that dude was born to play crazy characters.
The Conversation, Godfather 1 and 2, Dog Day Afternoon, Deer Hunter. I mean, come on.
I forget he's in Deer Hunter. Yes. Deer Hunter is another great ensemble. I mean, I would see John Savage show up every once in a while as a guy, And there's another guy, just powerhouse actor. And aside from the shows he gets starred on, he pretty much just, I'm sure he regrets his credits. He's just nothing worthy of his, near his talent. Eric Roberts has his share.
Eric Roberts has played anything and everything under the sun. Eric Roberts has probably paid like a cockroach or something, and I just haven't seen that film. His IMDb list is ridiculous.
Yeah, ever since Greenwich Village, is like, I'll do anything. And I saw some people joking around. I was like, he's the second best performance in The Dark Knight. I'm like, I'll take it. I love Aaron Eckhart, but I'll take it. Eric Roberts kind of stole the show.
Did you know that he was almost the voice of Candy Cane and Joyride? Like, they did the whole movie with his voice, and then they decided not to use it, and they ended up using Ted Levine instead.
What?
Yeah. That's what happens when you have too much time on your hand and you watch all the extra features on the Joyride Blu-ray.
Wow, I thought it was – I didn't know it was him. That's wild.
Yeah. You brought up something interesting earlier about, like, Asian actors.
Yeah, Takashi Kitano,
Yeah, and beef. Like Chow Yun-Fat, Andy Lau,
Tony Leung, Anthony Chow Wanzang, who other people know as Mad Dog and Hard Boiled, but you see all his other movies, and he'll sometimes play a ex-con or a homeless guy trying to go straight or serial killer. It's just that crazy hair really does it every time.
Yeah. One of the performances I never hear talked about enough is John Lone in Year of the Dragon.
Not enough talking about, yeah.
Movie at all in particular.
He was even in War with like Jet Li. And I was just like, that dude from The Last Emperor in Year of the Dragon. Like,
Yeah, and Year of the Dragon's an interesting role for him because he's playing a triad who is kind of at war not only with the Italians, but he's at war with the elders of his organization because he feels he can do better. He's got such balls in that movie. It's such a great performance, and nobody talks about it.
Did you ever see, I take it you saw him in that other Yakuza movie with Christopher Lambert and Jun Chin?
A White Knights, what is it called?
Yeah, he did. No, it was like from 95, The Hunted. That's what it was called. Not to be confused with the Benicio del Toro movie. And there's another guy. Snatch, Usual Suspects, Swimming with Sharks, even as one of the asshole guys in the call center, and now
he's the assistant that Frank Wally is replacing in So English.
Yeah, there's another one, Frank Wally. He's usually straight faced, but every once in a while I will see him pop up as a serial killer or just some other guy not doing his job.
Dude, 100%. Like, not, I mean, in Pulp Fiction, he's just there to. What? but let's not forget, spoiler alert, he is the guy who turns out not to be who you think he is in Jack Nicholson and Danny DeVito's movie Hoffa.
Oh, that's right. I think that probably gave him his role in Luke Cage as the crooked cop. So there you go.
Right? And then he's like the fake Oswald in JFK, and he's like really slimy.
Oh, now I got to rewatch it now. I've been long overdue to rewatch it because it's a good movie, but yeah, now I will definitely. Oh, man. Are you
again
a Chaz Palminteri fan?
I'm a huge Chaz Palminteri fan.
I would see him pop up on Modern Family. I'm like, yeah, but this dude is deep. If you've seen any of his appearances in Woody Allen comedies and just other movies playing narcs or gangsters, he has a certain rhythm about him. It's just so natural. And I mean, last thing I saw him was this Gambler movie with Christina Lotti, and he was like a producer on it. He really liked how it was kind of a coming of age movie, and it was different. Like, he was still kind of tipping his hat to that gangster mold he had perfected, but he's like, no, but I'm not doing a Bronx Tale for the billionth time. I'm doing more just a guy who occasionally meets some off-color people, and I got to raise a mentally ill kid who needs a father figure in his life. And it's like, it was just really cool just seeing that kind of predicament.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Chaz Palminteri, especially Bronx Tale. So Palminteri, before he got into his film career, he was specifically doing one-man shows, kind of like John Leguizamo was doing. So
Leguizamo, love him.
Bronx Tale was originally a one-man show where he pretty much did all the characters of Bronx Tale as like a long monologue. And he was like kind of telling a story, almost like a spoken word type of thing. De Niro desperately wanted to do this film, but the studio didn't want Palminteri to be the star of it, to be in the role.
Oh man, I can't imagine.
So they've had it on the back burner forever because De Niro said, I'm not making this film unless this guy plays Sonny, because he wrote it. He knows the words. They wanted De Niro to play Sonny. And he's like, no, I want to play the father and I want to direct it. So that went through years of developmental hell because De Niro wanted Palminteri to get the recognition so much because he turned a one-man show into that sprawling gangster drama.
And just showing the shamelessness and unapologetic attitude it really is an underrated movie, especially it's one of the better post-Goodfellas movies that really does use its narration so well to build up all the hypocrisies you see growing up in those areas.
And the fact that, like, he says it's better to be feared than to be loved because fear lasts longer. I mean, how relevant of a line is that? Politician talk, but like when you watch all these gangster TV shows and all these gangster films, it's true, man. Like as soon as someone dies, they have a big feast and then, all right, on to the next. You know, the love kind of goes away, but the fear lives on as long as you live on and you make people fear. No, that's one of the most deep and relevant terms I've ever heard in a gangster film.
Sweet. Yeah, I do occasionally see a quote and I'll be like, I think I heard in something like that or Blood In, Blood Out. You know, just one of those post-90s movies. What's your take on Ray Liotta?
I like the dude, man. The first time I saw him was Goodfellas. I think most of us were exposed to Goodfellas. Henry Hill, you know, where it's like,
He's done some decent movies, but everyone acts like it was direct-to-video hell. But you watch them, and it's like they were on TV quite a lot. They were just pretty straightforward, noirish-looking detective movies.
Yeah, and then after, I want to say like the mid-90s, I saw his earliest film that I could think of, which was Something Wild. That dude, he plays a psycho, and he plays it so well. I'm like, oh my God, it's not like the charismatic Henry Hill from Goodfellas. This guy is a fucking nightmare. And I like him. I like what he's doing in his older age too, where he's not afraid to play like the rundown guy. I mean, Narc.
He plays the mysterious contact in Kill the Messenger, and he brings that aura to it. He's in, what's that other one?
Well, I was saying, Narc was just, he's just fantastic in Narc.
Oh, yes, Narc. Narc was great.
And then he turns around and plays one of the funniest characters in Observe and Report. As like
Observe and Report. The cop that's just
been with Seth Rogen the whole time.
The bad cop trying to, you know, redeem himself in Copland. He's even in, he was in The Place Beyond the Pines as a cop kind of doing some dirty business. And he tells her, I'll take care of your old man's son. And then, of course, the old man's son's like, I don't want any part of you. I just know. You're laundering all this money, stealing from less fortunate people. Did you ever watch The Closer?
The Closer or Closer?
Yeah, The Closer.
I don't think so.
Okay, or Major Crimes. They show a pretty, like The Shield, they show a pretty cool LAPD type squad. And just seeing Tony Denison, who had been in Crime Story, as well as the Secret Service agent dad on Prison Break, as well as Michael Paul Chan, this bald guy who you might know as the liquor store Asian owner in Falling Down. They were great as the squad. Definitely gave career best performances. But the standout for me was Raymond Cruz as Detective Sanchez. You know, you already know him as Tuco from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Is like seeing him do that franchise, both those franchises, you know, Breaking Bad and Closer back to back, is like, man, but dynamite guy. And you've seen him in other stuff.
He's also the delivery guy in Gremlins 2. Gizmo to Christopher Lee.
Yeah, totally. He's in all these other military and gangster movies, often playing thugs or just bystanders or Marines who are going AWOL. But yeah, I mean, you know, Tuco, he just steals the show because one, you don't know if he's going to have a violent outburst and then try and justify it. And on Closer, it was cool because he just had just a lot of moody, silent scenes. And then they worked in a cool arc for him later on where it's like he had a anger problem and he was always having to go on just crusades trying to find out who was shooting at his various cousins or his mother who was in, you know, foster care and not foster care, but just retirement home. And it was just one of those like, this guy is just, he needs a hug once in a while. Otherwise he's going to fucking explode in this room.
It's funny, we were talking about Leguizamo a little bit ago. I can't remember what podcast it was on, but he was on a podcast. I think it might have been Gilbert Gottfried's or Stern or something.
Was it recent?
And in the last couple years.
Okay.
He was talking about how he actually was offered Tuco first.
No.
And he was like, man, I'm tired of playing these Latin American drug dealers that just give us a bad name. And this show is probably going to suck anyway. You've got Malcolm in the Middle Dad playing the guy. No, fuck this show. And then he saw it. And then he saw Raymond Cruz playing the role that he was supposed to play. And he was like, God damn, what the fuck is wrong with me? I turned down a great opportunity.
I mean, it would have been interesting, but I mean, he's already proven himself time and again, just with so many different cop and gangster roles. So, I mean, but yeah, it would have been interesting. They should just sneak him in there just somewhere, just be just a random guy just selling drugs saying, hey, want to get high and play video games?
Yeah. He's Benny Blanco from the Bronx.
Oh, there you go. Man. Carlito's he was in a cool movie called Empire.
Yeah, that was a pretty good movie. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
It's Blood In, Blood Out 2, I call it. Stephen Bauer's another one. He comes in, he can be smooth, or he can just be... I even saw him on an NCIS episode where he's playing Torres' dad, and that was just kind of fun because he just always has an element. He just can't escape the Scarface mold. He just can't. And,
well, I mean, yeah. What's the guy, Vincent, who did Breaking Bad? Vincent what?
Oh, Vince Gilligan. Yeah.
Vince Gilligan.
Casting him in that.
Obviously a Scarface fanboy, man, because he's got Bauer in there. He's got Margulis in there, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised he didn't get crazy-eyed Otto Sanchez from Oz on there.
Or F. Murray Abraham. I was expecting to see him.
F. Murray Abraham would have been fun. Cole Hauser's another one. I see him play cops to death. Omari Hardwick was on this one show with Dylan McDermott called Dark Blue years before you played Ghost on Power.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
But now I saw him in Army of the Dead, and he's kind of still in that mold. He'll play guys who are just kind of like Leguizamo, just in between the lines. You can say what you want of him. There's this other guy from Breaking Bad, Maurice Comte. If you look him up, you're like, oh, yeah, a little bearded guy. I remember him when I saw him on this show with Benjamin Bratt called E-Ring. He was playing a Navy SEAL, and he was also playing a thug with Raymond Cruz on a three-part episode of 24.
I got a question for you, though.
Yes.
Who do you think is one of the more overrated characters to play a gangster? Like, what character do you think is probably like the most overrated that maybe got more attention than it deserved? Because I thought about that quite a bit on my show. It's like, there are some performances that were really, like, cherished by the critics or by the masses. And then upon reflection, we're like, yeah, were they really that good, though, in that role? Were they really the right person to play a gangster?
That's a good question. There's this one guy from Analyze This who has just, not to be mean, but he really does have kind of a crude-looking face.
The guy that plays Kelly?
He might be. Let me look him up. Yes, that guy. I've seen him in a bunch of other just really bad movies. I've just always been, I mean, rest in peace. I've just never dug his performances. I just always felt like he just kind of just come on in. Seymour Castle is kind of another one. He's an acceptable actor, but he's also just kind of one of those, I'm like, but there's just not very much range to his characters. And so I just always
like that. I like Seymour Cassell, but he definitely has a one note.
Better playing an uncle as opposed to, hey, I'm going to knife you. I'm going to shank you. James Caan's kind of another one where he's pretty cool, but other than Thief and Godfather, I don't think he ever made good on his promise of playing those kind of roles. And when he finally gets to Las Vegas and he found himself, he didn't really want to do that, but had to do it until the contract expired. I kind of just think, I
failed
think just,
halfway through that season, right? Yeah.
Burning those bridges. I think
they replaced him with Tom Selleck.
Of all people, a cool guy, but totally different persona. And it's like, yeah, the show kind of worked just because it was just always kind of campy. It was kind of catered to like kind of a douchey crowd, but the people involved fortunately had a comedy background. And
I always considered it like a soap opera for dudes, you know?
Yeah, it's Dallas meets the A-Team. That's practically what it was. It's just like, yeah, let's see these guys try and stop people from stealing the casino and just utter soapy mayhem, like to say. Did you ever meet Robert Lissardo?
No.
Okay, so you might know him as the bald drug dealer only on The Professional, bad guy in Death Race remake.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And yeah, he was also on Nip Tuck, and he was another one. He's like, apparently, I think he quit SAG, so he's on all these indie projects now, but I just always found him underrated as the main, killer of Horatio's wife on CSI Miami. And I met him at a convention, and I kid you not, we talked for 3 hours, just nicest man ever. Awesome. And he had a Marine background, and he's like, part Hispanic, part Italian. And it's just so funny when you see, much like Leguizamo, you see him pop up in some of these early Seagal movies. And he's kind of another one. He was slightly able to tweak it a bit. You know, he could, every once in a while, he's just the tattoo parlor guy or just the guy who's just like, he's not a bad person, but he is a questionable person. And he's able to keep you in suspense. And he just has a fun voice. He just has what you see of him in every role, it really is his blunt honesty. He's just really good at it. And God, there's just so many other ones, but I'll try my best. James Russo in Beverly Hills Cop, he's a thug in Fast Times. But yeah, unfortunately, just kind of goes the B-movie route, but I light up whenever I see him on a bigger thing, like a guy with mob connections on Chicago Fire and Roshan Zim and Vincent Castle are always these reliable French guys. Gonzalo Menendez is really good as one of the narcs on Breaking Bad. This bald Italian guy. I call him Mexican Bruce Willis. That's basically what he is. Lobo Sebastian is this other guy. You see him in anything, you're like, oh, I know I've seen him. Whether it's on a Conan O'Brien episode of all things or Ghosts of Mars or an episode of The Shield. Jonathan Banks, there's another one. I thought, okay, he's just like Russo. He's just going to always be known for Beverly Hills Cop. But then after a dozen B pictures later, eventually I see him playing aliens on Star Trek. And then now he's immortalized by Community and Breaking Bad. And I'm just like, he's a really funny guy. He can actually do more than what we thought he could. And Stephen Graham, I'm sure you'll know from Boardwalk Empire and Line of Duty. Yeah,
Jonathan Banks, though, like, I grew up with Jonathan Banks as the deputy in Gremlins with the sheriff.
Oh, that's right. He is the deputy in Gremlins. And I'm sure he's on some other wacky horror movie that I forgot.
Oh, he was in a lot of wacky stuff. I can't remember what movie. He plays like a pizza delivery guy. You see it pop up in these 80s movies like, oh, it's Jonathan Banks.
You would have never known. And yeah, I'm just so... Oh, he was one of the attorneys, I think, on Wise Guy. So yeah, I think that's just it. That gave him some credibility. He's like, hey, stop casting me as just that. Give me a break. Robert Miano has been a big one ever since the original Death Wish as a carjacker, but you might know him as Sonny Red and Donnie Brasco. And it's that dude.
Yeah, Donnie Brasco put a lot of the character faces that you would see in these movies.
Michael Madsen,
Bruno Kirby.
Who we always associate with Harry Mansell. I'm like, yeah, but what does he play the rest of the time? He's really creepy. Kirby is really creepy on this one homicide episode. Oh my God.
Yeah, rest in peace, too, on that guy, man. I love that guy.
How old was he when he passed away? And
Probably like in his late 40s or early 50s.
I always remembered him from City Slickers. That was the thing.
Well, he's young Clemenza to me in Godfather 2. Like,
that's right. Oh, my God. Memory. Damn.
Yeah. Let's see.
What about the Mandalore brothers, Lewis and Costas?
Costas Mandalore, I always remember from Picket Fences growing up.
Picket Fences.
Because I had a crush on Lauren Holly, and he was always the pretty guy.
He pretty always was. Guy. You see his resume, it's a bunch of softcore thrillers, and then brief TV arcs on Last Ship, and then unfortunately, he just was always the go-to B-movie guy working on Fred Olen Ray, Jim Wynorski, Schlockfest, but he's pretty decent. If you give him enough material, if you give him a Lifetime movie, he won't try. But if you give him some decent stuff, he's pretty good. But yeah, Lewis, I think, is pretty good, even though most people know him from like shows like Martial Law and My Big Fat Greek Wedding. But it's like, he's pretty much the go-to. He's producing and directing a lot of his own stuff where he plays a cop or sometimes they will play brothers.
Am I wrong? Am I mistaken? But didn't he play the guy that Matt LeBlanc was trying to get to be his twin brother? As Joey
probably
and Friends,
I think so, and I think he kind of joked about that on Martial Law, where he was like, "I'm gonna be on a sitcom soon." I think they worked that in to reference his Friends appearance.
Yeah, I think Joey was trying to do like this medical study for money, where it was like for identical twins, and he sees Mandalore at a audition. It looks just like him. He's like, "You're gonna be my twin."
Yes. Oh my God. He does. He did appear on a bunch of good sitcoms, and he was even in this one movie with Dolph Lundgren that was by the John Wick creator called One in the Chamber. And I just found it funny because it's like, yeah, for a while, Cuba Gooding Jr. has been doing a bunch of assassin movies, and Dolph Lundgren is almost always nowadays kind of in a Yojimbo kind of plot line where he's the sure.
You know who he didn't talk about as we're talking back, as we're circling back to Asian films, is James Hong, man.
Oh, yes.
He's in Year of the Dragon 2. He's in Black Rain. He's in Abel Ferreira's China Girl, which is an underrated Romeo.
I forgot he was in that with Caruso and Lissardo.
Yeah,
yes.
Man. So again, like, there's just these actors that get
Michael Imperioli's in one Ferreira film. I think it's the it's the vampire one with him and Eddie Falco and
The Addiction.
Annabelle Scora.
Yeah, The Addiction.
Yeah. The Addiction, yeah. And it's just so wild because it's like such an atypical vampire movie, you know?
Yeah.
It's like losing your mind and then just only near the end does it become a gore fest. But Ferreira definitely helped them out a bunch. And it's easy to see why he was best friends with Michael Mann. And they were basically practically just borrowing each other's actors. It's like, I'll give you Caruso. You can give me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the difference between those two is that Ferreira was definitely a genre guy.
He was not a studio guy.
He was not a studio guy. And, you know,
Man liked to do biographies.
I think that the pilot for Crime Story is one of the best pilots ever made. And the fact that Ferreira did it and then jumps into doing like kind of schlocky movies like
Fear Killer, but yeah.
Like that, you know?
There's another one. What's his name? The main dude.
Behringer?
No, not Tom Berger, the main guy in Crime Story.
Oh, Dennis Farina.
I do like that movie. Yes, Dennis Farina, rest his soul. And it's like, Yeah, I mean, people know him now for just basically playing cops in Manhunter and Law and Order, but it's like, yeah, I remember him specifically, him and Joe Pantoliano just being the funniest characters besides Grodin in Midnight Run.
Farina's got one of the best origin stories ever.
He was disciplined.
He was a Chicago cop. He was a Chicago cop, and Michael Mann hired him to be the
supervisor,
On Thief, and started using him as like his criminal specialist in all these films.
It's just so funny. He's teaching them how to be cops, and they're teaching him how to act. And it's like, what a great trade-off to get your sack.
Man, it was Farina who introduced Michael Mann to the real Neil McCauley, who was the basis for L.A. Takedown, which eventually became Heat.
So
if it wasn't for Farina, those films wouldn't exist.
I thought he mainly was doing the supervisor, but that's even more awesome.
Yeah, man, like Michael Mann used to do like these ride-arounds with him and just listen to these stories. And he's like, dude, why aren't you acting? It's funny, I watched this movie not too long ago. It was an 80s TV movie called Final Jeopardy. It was called Final Jeopardy. And it had the guy who played John Boy from the Waltons. And it's of like After Hours meets the Out-of-Towners. They play this couple who go to a unnamed city. It was actually Chicago. That after 8 o'clock, everything shuts down, and then they get stuck in the middle of the city, and their car gets locked in the parking garage, and they get chased around the city by
hoods. Oh, Jesus.
And at the very end, a cop kind of like comes to the rescue, and it's Dennis.
Wow.
Farina.
That's wild.
But yeah, I mean, Farina played a good gangster, and I think he played a good gangster because he played a good cop, but. I'm not gonna say a crooked cop, but most Chicago cops, you really never know based off their attitude which way they're going, you know?
No, and I'm sure he opened up the bars, got him to cooperate, and then made him realize, hey, you know, be on your best behavior. Did you ever follow Freddie Rodriguez?
Yeah, I mean, I first saw him in Dead Presidents, and then, you know,
Harsh Times with Christian Bale, he's amazing in.
Well, then I also remembered him oh my God, what's that funny movie that he's in?
Grindhouse.
And then he's also Grindhouse. Yeah, he's in the Robert Rodriguez segment. But yeah, that's a guy I wish I could see more of. I really liked his performance. Yeah.
W. Earl Brown's another one. I saw him pop up on this Hulu show, but he'll always be immortalized as the barkeep guy in Deadwood. Jesse Barrigo is another one. Just a very, very nicely spoken guy. I heard him on one of the 24 reunion podcast episodes, and he, you know, you might know him as a serial killer on one season of Dexter, but I love how he was part of Blood In, Blood Out, and just kind of just always faded for that. He's like one of the few good things I can say about Columbiata, playing the main character's dad with some drug ties.
Yeah, I forgot that was him.
Harvey Keitel, again, is always reliable, and there's even a few other ones. Eric Tazang is another one.
That we're not talking about like the main guys because they get enough credit, you know?
Yeah, they're immortalized.
Like, they're immortalized.
Are you a fan of Lenny James?
I don't know that guy.
Okay, so he's one of the black thieves in Snatch. He's the main spy guy in the TV show Jericho, and he's also one of the first crooked cops investigated who's trying to make everything work even though it's getting messy in Line of Duty. I guarantee if you look him up, you'll be like,
I've seen him. Probably not from Snatch. Yeah,
Lenny James, you have so seen him, and it's just impeccable how he just can disguise his accent. American, British, I'm whoever you want me to be, and if you want me to be Jamaican, I'll do it. I got the hair. And I see him now. He's doing like some medical show with some gray area. Robert Davi is immortalized by Profiler and Special Agent Johnson in Die Hard, but you might know him as Sanchez in the James Bond movie.
Robert Davi, come on. Maniac Cop 2.
Maniac Cop 2 and Free, yeah. He's a trumper, Goonies. But there's no denying he is a crazy good actor. He's just really brings dynamite. I know he's difficult kind of to work with, but I think he came around.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Victor Rivers. Do you remember Santa Anna in The Mask of Zorro?
Oh, yeah.
He has that almost I call him Mexican Fu Manchu. He was in Fled with Lawrence Fishburne.
I don't think I've ever seen him without that.
He's in a creepy alien episode of Deep Space Nine, and it's like, and he's another one. And like, I see him appear in like one of the Hulk movies, and it's like, why does this guy not have more work? He's a pretty talented dude, but I guess same kind of deal. He's just a casual character actor. He just blends through it. He almost reminds me of another talented guy who plays a lot of gangsters when he's not playing evil genies. Andrew Devoff from Wishmaster and Toy Soldiers is like,
yeah.
I'm never surprised when I see him as a crime boss, and he's just another one of those guys. I'm like, I wish he could appear in like more movies, shows, or video games. At least give him a recurring role, you know, something instead of these one-offs.
So, I mean, I got to wrap up soon, but I really want to know, like, do you have a favorite? It's so hard to ask favorites, but
I got a favorite. It's a tie between Jack McGee, who you might know as the desk sergeant on NYPD Blue, but you also 100%. Know him as one of the firefighters in Rescue Me. But Chris Penn,
wasn't he also Mark Wahlberg's dad in The Fighter?
I wouldn't doubt it. It's definitely a New Jersey, New York thing. He's definitely in one of those movies. And that's just it. It's just to your theory. It's like eventually just the roles you really want to play that are just so emotionally rewarding to the audience and to the actor, they come your way.
Yeah.
And I'm never surprised to see him play like guest star or be in a movie like The International, just guest starring as a Chicago or New Jersey type cop who's just unapologetic but has his heart in the right place. And sometimes he'll reverse it to be a guy who's like, I gotta take down the crooks in my division, you know, just shit like that. And Sean Penn's brother, late brother, Chris Penn, I find very talented. And I just loved how he would often be in all these movies with Michael Madsen and Gina Gershon and all these other character actors like Leguizamo. And he just realized, it's like, man, you know, he may be just one of the secondary guys in Reservoir Dogs, but, or funny bit parts like Rush Hour. Is like, this dude can really... I mean, you see him in even just heartwarming comedies like Footloose. Like, the dude could act. And
Chris Penn is True Romance, though. As
True Romance, even Best of the Best, the first two movies.
Yeah, Best of the Best, he's in that.
But it is like, for a guy who had a lot working against him, heavy drugs and weight, I always heard great things about people who had worked with him. I forget which actor brought him up. The director... who worked on Fist of the North Star and Hellraiser 2. Yeah, he said, Chris, dedicated guy, would always ask permission to try out a performance. I'm like, see, that's the kind of person we're talking about, where you can forgive them their habit abusing, you know, and just nail it to the wall. So just a few, just like three more names, four more names before you go. Have you checked out Jack Conley?
Sounds familiar. Please remind me who that is.
Crooked guy on NCIS. You see him on all these other movies, Mob City, and he's even the main overlord bad guy in the second Purge movie. But you've seen him, and you're never surprised when you see him playing police lieutenants or shady men in black trying to apprehend an alien device or some shit, or just an organized crime affiliate guy. And been in movies of all kinds, just always reliable. Jonathan Tucker's another guy. You might know him as one of the psychos in Hostage. Christos is another one from Dusk Till Dawn, but I see him in all these other movies. He's often heavily tattooed. And I'm sorry.
Exactly who you're talking about.
John Bernthal. Right? Yes. And John Bernthal, Woody Harrelson, obviously. But I mean, Wade Williams, you might know as the crooked prison guard on Prison Break, but
yes,
again,
absolutely.
I would see him pop up on Michael Mann shows, like I think Robbery Homicide Division and Crime Story, and then I see him as the referee in the Muhammad Ali bio. I'm like, dude, I had no idea that was him the whole time, and he appears in that guy who was in that thing. And I'm like, man, what a very nice guy for someone who just got typecast, you know, just playing heavies. And I heard somewhere that he was in my neck of the woods. He owned like a mansion here in Dallas, Texas. I'm like, well, good on him. I only just saw him on a Westworld episode playing a holographic outlaw, and he was hysterical. He's just really does have that can change at any minute, you know, kind of attitude. And so the last one I'm going to leave you with, Simon Yam. You've seen him in every other Jet Li Donnie Yen movie, and
I'm sure
just glorious. He can play it to the bone. He's really ruthlessly evil in Full Contact with Chow Yun-Fat, but then you see him in all these other movies. He's often the police inspector who mentors someone and dies at the end, or a crime family guy who's like, no, you're abusing the privilege of your honor. Where I'm going to have to kill your nephew because you just capped my nephew in the stomach. So yeah, no, I'm going to have to fucking kill your nephew. And he knows how to do dark comedy, just like all these other guys that you mentioned. It is like James Hong has his moments where, you know, I call it the Ernie Hudson, Michael Ironside or Adam West effect. Just, you want me to just do that a little lightly or a little this? Either way, I can play it straight face and it works for either serious or comedy.
100%. Michael Ironside especially. If I had to give you my three favorite like gangster
characters. Top three guys.
My top three. I'm going to give you three because I thought about this. I would say, God, and it's kind of stereotypical and the roles aren't a lot, but man, Gary Oldman in True Romance.
Gary Oldman.
And in The Professional Man, like those two kind of would make up for like 30 films where he would play that character. I mean,
yes.
Drexel is probably one of the best gangster characters ever.
And
what makes me appreciate it even more is that Tarantino didn't write him that way. Gary Oldman came in with those dreadlocks. He came in saying, this is how I'm playing this character.
And I love how many unintentional reunions he and Sam Jackson have had, because the same kind of deal.
No kidding.
Don't turn down a role and be the best part about every single movie. Got it. And
got it.
Last, so I'll let you mention a few more, and I'll just give free honorable mentions.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, so my second one is Frank Vincent.
I was forgetting someone. Oh, the snitch in that NYPD Blue two-parter and
Frank Leotardo, man. In
Leotardo, yeah.
Sopranos.
Billy Batson,
and he's the glue that holds gangster films together. Like, he is the glue.
The Scorsese-Vincent trilogy.
Yes. He is the plot driver for the third act of
Casino.
Goodfellas. And
oh, yeah, but Casino, remember, too. He's taking out the trash. And
yeah, man.
He's even briefly featured in, what's the one? Raging Bull. He's the bar fight again.
He's the guy that
I finally saw The Family Enforcer, which was one of Joe Pesci's earlier movies, and that's the one where he recommended Scorsese. He's like, hey, I know you've seen this driving movie. That's how you found me. You gotta hire this guy. And Scorsese was like afraid to hire him. Like, I don't know. I thought he was actually mob affiliated. I was like, no, he's just a jazz singing actor from the Actors Studio who happens to get all this.
Pesci and Vincent had a comedy act back in the 60s. That's how they like kind of.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah,
they were kind of like a Martin and Lewis kind of thing, but Italian.
Oh, wow. That's fucking awesome. They should have totally been in a Rat Pack movie had they been on there earlier.
No, oh man, I only wish. And then we already talked about him, but I'd say my third favorite, just because his face shows up fucking everywhere, is Henry Silva. Like, Henry Silva's face is just so memorable.
And he even came out of retirement to do Samurai Cop 2.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Like, again, like, look up that guy's IMDb.
Fox and then Warriors also, 2 and various westerns.
I keep telling all these people who I'm running into on these Facebook groups that are following the Vinegar Syndrome titles and ordering all these films, I'm like, go back and look at how many of these things Frank Silva's in. You're like, oh my God, he may as well be like the poster child for Vinegar Syndrome, you know?
Yeah, near X-rated giallo and all that stuff. And I'm just glad that they are immortalized. They could die tomorrow, but in our hearts, they have such a vast resume that we always got to try and find out. You know, it's going to take a while for us to get through all 300 movies they've done, but I mean, they'll always be, they are immortalized in pop culture, as for sure, especially for hardcore genre fans. So an honorable mention to Marlon Brando, Lawrence Tate, Menace to Society fame. Whenever I see him pop up in a comedy role, he's great. But then I see him guest star in a Justified episode as a guy who holds a diner hostage. And then he's on Power as the crooked mayor. He just knows how to just really play to the camera. And Tiki Cario from Bad Boys, GoldenEye, and La Femme Nikita is like, and Kiss of the Dragon, just a go-to, just villainous guy, French guy. And here he is now on a PBS show I'm seeing now from France. And Joaquin D. Almeida. who is Bucho from Desperado.
And he's in Clear and Present Danger.
Yes, I just saw it. It was great. And the fight scene with him and Harrison Ford. And I got to work. He's a villainous cartel guy, similarly on 24's third season. And then I see him. I got to meet him on set. He was a funny, funny fucker on Queen of the South. And that show really, it wasn't very good to begin with. It was like a really bad soap opera meets like Man on Fire or Taken. But he was really just a joy to see. He'd be blow drying his hair, making sure his daughter's doing her studies on set, and then just go back. And he would just try. He was a trooper. He'd do his best to memorize a whole speech. And then he'd be like, I'm sorry, guys, the teleprompter's a little far away. How about I come here this way and at this point sit down, you know, for this speech? And then they kill his character off, and it didn't help that they had spoiled it on set. And you're like, well, what's the fucking point? He's kind of the main big bad. I don't care about all those other idiots. But yeah, no, you have done a great job. Instead of giving all this attention to all these Vinnie Jones or all these other types, you brought up some other good ones. So.
Yeah, man. This is a lot of fun. I never get to like just spout actors with people, so it's really fun.
And most people don't want to do that. They're afraid it'll go on too long. I'm like, well, trust me, it feels just so freeing when you can say something like this.
Well, and then like, yeah, we spouted off movies rapid fire, but I'm sure there's some people who have never seen these and now they're like writing them down really fast. All right, I go, what was that he said?
That's the idea. You know, if I can recommend you a movie that has The Sopranos actors or Wire actors in it, please. You know, and I'm sorry if I forgot a few. Again, we were going for the less talked about ones that are still pretty
100%.
Well known.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Where can we find you on the interweb, The Cult Worthy Podcast?
I mean, man, anywhere where you listen to podcasts, you can find The Cult Worthy Podcast, and you can also find my sister show, The Cult Worthy Classic, which is a deep dive episode, deep dive series into films made before 1970. And I have thecultworthy.com, which is my website and blog site where you can find all of my reviews. There's about 300 now, a little bit more, and any kind of
gets to over 9,000.
Yeah, I know. I'm working on mine. I've been working on it for maybe like a year. I mean, I've got a bunch written down but not uploaded because I'm a perfectionist and I double check all the spelling and shit. But on the website too, you'll also find links to all of my partner podcasts that we collaborate with and do a lot of like sharing guests and stuff like that. So yeah, that's where you'll find me.
Sweet. Thank you for being on here. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, safe absolutely. Out there. And I'll reach out to you soon, man. You should come and guest on the Cult Worthy Classic. We can talk about something made before 1970.
1,000%. I will do my homework. Say the topic. I'll be there.
All right. Thank you so much.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out The Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.